Anyway, Valentine's cards are big news for those of school age, apparently. But surprisingly, it's teachers, not pupils, who get the most Valentine's cards.
Oh. From the pupils.
Yeah, I don't know whether that's true. Generally, it's teachers that get the most cards, then children, then mothers, then wives, and then pets. That would be nice, wouldn't it? No, I'll tell you, love it. Love could be all those things, but the Bible has a better definition of love, and I'm going to read it to you this morning. It's from the book of 1 John, and it says this: "This is how God showed his love among us. He sent his one and only Son into the world that we might live through him. This is love, not that we love God, but that he loved us and sent his Son as an atoning sacrifice for our sin." Love is shown through the sacrifice of Jesus. And we show it in lots of different little ways, but that's what love is. Love is God willing to send for us. We're going to start by singing together. I'm going to, as always, hold on, I've lost the button. I'm going to mute you all so you can sing your hearts. First, we're going to have our reading this morning. It's from Ruth, chapter 2, and Robin is going to read. So shall I mute, Robin, unmute, hold on. I'll mute everyone. Robin, if you can unmute yourself. Brilliant. Thank you.
So it's Ruth 2, 17 to 23. So Ruth gleaned in the field until evening. Then she beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. And she took it up and went into the city. Her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. She also brought out and gave her what food she had left over after being satisfied. And her mother-in-law said to her, "Where did you glean today? And where have you worked? Blessed be the man who took notice of you." So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, "The man's name with whom I work today is Boaz." And Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, "May he be blessed by the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead." Naomi also said to her, "The man is a close relative of ours, one of our redeemers." And Ruth the Moabite said, "Besides, he said to me, 'You shall keep close by my young men until they have finished all my harvest.'" And Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It is good, my daughter, that you go out with these young women, lest in another field you be assaulted." So she kept close to the young women of Boaz, gleaning until the end of the barley and wheat harvests. And she lived with her mother-in-law.
Brilliant. Thank you, Robin. We're going to be thinking about that in a moment. But first, the challenge. Well, it's Valentine's Day, so your challenge is to create something to do with love. Can be anything. Something to do with love. That's your challenge, if you like a challenge for this week. And it will continue on till the end of the service, where we will see what things you have created this morning. So we're looking again at Ruth. And a little while ago, Joshua was looking through some of those Where's Wally books. Don't know whether you know those. For those of you who don't know the Where's Wally books, they're basically books that contain cartoon pictures of lots of people in one place. So it's people at the beach, people in the park, people at the shops. And somewhere in these pictures is Wally, a boy dressed in a red and white striped jumper and a hat. And all you have to do in the pictures is to find Wally. It's supposed to be fun, a bit like my Spot the Difference quiz. I gave it a go the other day, and I have to say that fun was probably the last thing on my mind, because, to be honest, I found it really, really hard. I couldn't find Wally anywhere in these pictures. And that was with all my focus on one picture. I wasn't doing anything else. I wasn't distracted. I was trying to find Wally. I couldn't spot him at all. Bit like Spot the Difference, which I find equally hard as well. So you can imagine the trouble I have spotting the difference in everyday life. I have real problems, for instance, when Simon changes his appearance, when he shaves off his beard. You know, Simon likes to have quite a big, bushy beard. And when he shaves it off, I can go for days without noticing. To be fair, I do sit there and think, something a bit different. Simon, you know, I know, I'm not sure. And sometimes it even takes someone else, one of the boys or someone else, to say, "Oh, I like that you've shaved off your beard," for me to even realise that something has happened. Because sometimes, you know, when we're immersed in life, when we're immersed in what's going on around us, in the way that we feel and the things that we're seeking to cope with, it can be really hard to spot when things change or when things are different, until they're made really clear to us. And, you know, this is a situation that Naomi finds herself in the book of Ruth, Because you see, Ruth has gone out into the fields, as we read last week. She left to find food and some sort of stability for herself and her mother-in-law as they arrive back in Bethlehem. Naomi, of course, lets her go. She's not particularly bothered about what Ruth does because she's immersed in her own world. A world that has seen her life crash around her with the death of her husband and her sons and her future. As we heard, she had left the famine of Bethlehem years before, a woman of God with a family and some hope. And she had returned with nothing. Well, she had returned with Ruth, but in Naomi's world of grief and darkness, she feels she has returned with nothing. As she says to those who greeted her when she came back, "Call me Mara, because the Almighty has made my life very bitter. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty." She believes that God has left her. She has suffered too much and experienced too great a loss that she cannot believe that God still has an interest in her life. In fact, if we take her words on her return to Bethlehem, she believes it is God who has caused her distress. "The Lord has afflicted me," she says. "The Almighty has brought misfortune upon me." She cannot believe that God, her God, will now bring any good to her. Her hope is gone and her God has deserted her. And so she lets Ruth go to find food and security. She lets Ruth go to find hope, not really believing Ruth will come back with any. I mean, maybe Naomi thinks Ruth might find some way for them to survive for a while. But not for one minute does she believe that life can really be transformed. And so when Ruth returns after a long, long day in the fields, working hard to glean the leftovers, and she returns with enough barley for her and Naomi to eat for 2 weeks or more, and enough leftover food for a good meal that evening, Naomi is shocked. So shocked, in fact, that her mind begins to come alive and suddenly she's asking questions. "Where did you glean today? Where did you work? How did you get all this food and more when you only left this morning in the hope of gleaning something?" It's as if her mind begins to work and her eyes begin to open. And when Ruth answers, "The name of the man I worked with today is Boaz," Naomi suddenly realises that perhaps she has been wrong, that maybe she has not been abandoned, that perhaps despite her situation, God does still care. Because through the seeming coincidence of Boaz being a relative of her husband and Ruth ending up in Boaz's field and Boaz responding with generosity, Naomi suddenly realises that all this time God has been at work and that actually despite her disbelief and her understandable self-absorption and the fact that she could not see the changes that he was bringing, God had always been at work, behind the scenes, in the darkness, at her lowest point. Because despite all that went on in her life, God loved Naomi and Ruth and Boaz. And from day one, he was working for their good. It was just that Naomi needed this wake-up call to recognise the changes that had been happening all along. It makes me think of times when older relatives I hadn't seen for ages used to pop over to mom and dad's when I was still living at home. And, you know, they'd look at me and they'd look a bit confused. And then one of the first things they'd say would be, "Oh, my goodness, haven't you grown? Last time I saw you, you were like this high. You were just a little girl." And I'd think, "Well, of course I've grown. I'm 18 now. You know, it's not like I'm five anymore, is it?" It was amusing because it happened all the time and slightly annoying at the same time. But you know what people are really saying is, "I haven't seen you for a while. And so I thought you would just be the same as when I last saw you." They are saying, if you like, what Naomi was thinking about God, that because she hadn't seen him working for so long, she assumed that God had abandoned her because that's the last thing she felt back in Moab. And it's only as she pieced together the circumstances in Bethlehem that she began to realise that actually God had been working all along, that things had been changing. It's just that she hadn't noticed that this was happening. And, you know, this is the truth that this passage shouts at us today, that even when we don't know, even when we cannot see, even when we don't realise or can't even comprehend, God is working in our lives and in our world. And that behind the scenes and in the darkness, even in the midst of the most hopeless of situations, God is at work. Because, you see, God doesn't wait for us to see him before he does anything. He doesn't need for us to ask or plead with him to do something before he can. He's not expecting us to turn back to him before he makes changes. Because the simple fact is that God loves his world so much that he cannot help but continue to have a hand in the lives of those he created. Naomi didn't ask or plead or cry out to God for help. In fact, it isn't even recorded that she prayed at all. But it didn't matter. because God still longed to work. Or as the book of Isaiah states, clearly God is a God who works behind the scene. And you know, today as we read the book of Ruth, this is something we would do well to hear. Because today as we continue to live in difficult times, to know that God is at work is not only a timely reminder for us, but it's also a vital truth that we need to cling on to. Because sometimes it's hard to see that God is doing things in the situation we're in at the moment. We're just going to have a few moments to pause. I think we've got a PowerPoint of pictures and we've got some music. And I thought it might be good just to have a moment to look at some of the pictures. They're not nice images. They're images of people struggling and they're images of things going on in the world. But to think that actually in these things that are happening, God is working. We might want to use these pictures as a moment to prompt us to pray, to use it as a prayer time just for these few moments. Or we might just want to be asking God to remind us that he is working in our lives and in the situations that we see. So John's going to put up a PowerPoint and some music and we'll just have a few moments to reflect and pause. Do you know what's amazing about Naomi in this passage is that despite her circumstances, once she sees God's hand at work, once she recognises that God is still active, she is moved to respond. First of all, she praises God for the first time in the entire story. She says, "The Lord bless him," when she thinks of Boaz, as if an attitude of praise has burst forth from her as she realises what God is doing. And then following this, in the most amazing turnaround from the start of the passage, Naomi seeks to get involved. She seeks to get involved with the work that God is doing. Because having recognised that God is at work, that he hasn't left her or abandoned her or brought trouble upon her and turned his back on her, she longs to be involved with the work that God's doing. And so she urges Ruth to continue working in Boaz's field. She said, "It would be good for you, my daughter-in-law, to go with the women who work for him, because in someone else's field you might be harmed." Or if you like, Naomi urges Ruth to follow what God is doing. Somehow God has worked behind the scenes so that Ruth has ended up gleaning in the field of someone who cares and could transform their lives. And so Naomi wants Ruth to continue following God's work. She's not willing to let this realization pass them by, because if God is doing something, Naomi wants to be involved in his plan. And so following her urging, Ruth gets involved. She continues gleaning in Boaz's field. And to be quite honest, when she does, it's hard work. We're told in the last verse of this passage that Ruth stayed close to the women of Boaz to glean until the barley and wheat harvests were finished. Or if you like, she continued to do the backbreaking work of gleaning for another 2 months or more. And she also continued to live with her mother-in-law, a situation that would have been really surprising for the first readers of this book, given the introduction of Boaz and the stability that a relationship with him would bring. But for the immediate future, Ruth's situation didn't change, and neither did Naomi's. It seemed just because they had recognised God's hand at work and sought to follow him didn't mean life became easier. But it did mean they were exactly where they should be, however hard it was and for however long it took. And this is the thing about following God, that above and beyond anything else, following God is knowing and reminding ourselves that he loves us and he's always working for good. And that in the light of this, our role is not so much to ask God for things in the hope that he'll care enough to do them, or set off in a certain direction in the hope that God will follow, but rather our role is to recognise that God is already working and to open our eyes and see the changes that are taking place. And when we recognise these, to seek to join him in the work that he's doing. Maybe we start to pray for certain people and places. Maybe we draw alongside someone as they struggle. Maybe we continue doing what we're doing, but with increased awareness of what's going on around us. Whatever it is, we seek to recognise that we are joining God in his work and we're where we should be for however long it takes. And of course, this doesn't mean it will be easy, just as it doesn't mean life will suddenly take a turn for the better. But it does mean we have knowingly placed ourselves in God's hands. And at this moment in time, in the situation we're in now, this is surely the best place that we can possibly be. In a moment, we're going to show our creations, the things that we've done around love and Valentine's Day. But I think first we'll sing our final song before we do that, which is a song some of you may know. It's quite an old song, so you may well know it. I don't know whether we've sung it at church, but if you don't know it, then please Never mind. Oh, well, another year. I want to finish with a little reading that I've got this morning. This reading is called Winter, and it says this: in the winter, it looks like the trees have all died. Their leaves wither and drop off. They stand like skeletons against the cold, desolate sky. But did you know, before even a single leaf falls to the ground, next spring's bud is ready. Next summer's leaf is furled inside that tiny bud waiting. And Jesus says, there is nothing broken that won't be mended, nothing sick that won't be healed, nothing dead that won't come live again, because God is making everything sad come untrue. We can't see it now, but remember the fruit tree in winter. It looks dead, but the buds are ready to go, and come spring, blossom and fruit. I will leave you with that as we conclude our time together, but don't go away.